Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
Yay, podcast night!
This episode is brought to you by Major Spoilers VIP members.
VIP stands for very important people, and their small monthly contributions ensure that this podcast remains free for all of you.
If you would like to become a bronze, silver, or gold VIP member, go to members.majorspoilers.com for more information.
I sure do thank you for your support. Now, here's your show.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course spoilers, and goes into detail about the topics discussed. So, if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items they talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, Sterling Gates joins the MSP to talk all things Sterling and or Gatesy. A new old hero arrives and squints. Old new heroes get picked up for more, and a just plain old hero may return to action. Steven's talking Tarzan. Rodrigo's hailing Hellboy. I sing a song of Saber Rider, and Ashley does her Ashley thing Canadian style. Plus the usual digressions, disquisitions, discourse, and declamation, and a kick butt poll of the week. So set them up and knock them down, but the cleanup's all up to you, because the Major Spoilers podcast is on the air.
Welcome to the Major Spoilers podcast, issue 668. So glad to have you with us. Thank you for downloading and listening. And thank you, everyone, who's using the Amazon link over at majorspoilers.com. Every time you make a purchase, a little bit comes back our way and allows us to keep doing this thing week after week after week. Speaking of things, there's Matthew, there's Rodrigo, and there's Ashley.
Hey.
Oh, hi.
Wow. So glad to have everybody here this week. So much to cover, including Ashley interviews Sterling Gates, writer of the Supergirl digital comic. More on that
Adventures
later.
Of Supergirl.
Yeah, later in the episode for that. But first, let us get to some news. All right, here we have our top three stories from this week. Indiana Jones is back with Spielberg and Ford. The new Civil War II trailer arrives, and it features Spider-Man. And the DC's Legends of Tomorrow return for season two. Let's spin that wheel, O Destiny. And let's see where we land. Round and round it goes. Spider-Man squints, and it lands on number one. Spielberg and Ford are back for another Indiana Jones movie. This was announced from Disney today. Of course, it was part of the Lucasfilm deal that was announced, you know, years ago when they bought it, that everything at Lucasfilm, including Indiana Jones, went to Disney. And there was some word, I think... I said like 2 years ago, right, when Star Wars was in the middle of production, they had said something about, yeah, we're working on a new Indiana Jones film. And at the time they were talking about a younger Indiana Jones and maybe a Chris Pratt Indiana Jones or let's kill Mutt Williams Indiana Jones movie. But no, let's do that anyway. No, Disney announced today that the next Indiana Jones film will arrive in theaters on July 19th, 2019, and it will have Harrison Ford in it, as well as Steven Spielberg directing, and with producers Kathleen Kennedy and Frank Marshall. So there you go.
You know what I'm hoping?
What are you hoping?
I'm hoping this is a Harrison Ford tour where he kills off all his iconic characters, so he can finally go and resign and get an airplane and sit down and play some golf and eat some grapes. That hopefully that's not a spoiler for people, but. That's what I'm kind of hoping this is Harrison Ford's last go around. And he's like, I'll do it. You have to kill me.
That means Frantic 2 Electric Boogaloo is coming up.
Right. And, you know, what's that one with the Amish?
Witness.
Yeah. Witness to Witness Ear.
Is that Elijah Williams in that? Who was the kid in
Elijah,
that one?
Maybe Elijah Wood, something like that. Yeah.
Frodo
is all grown up and he's looking for another man to help raise a barn.
Regarding Henry II, regarding Boogaloo.
Rodrigo, what's your reactions to this news today?
I don't know. Actually, my first reaction is, when is this going to be set? Because the Indiana Jones movies were set in the late 40s, right?
Right. So the
first one was in the 30s,
The first one was in the 30s. And what happened was, when we got to Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls, that one was set, I want to say, 19 years after the last movie, which was, in real time, 19 years after the last movie, after The Last Crusade, which put that movie in like 1957, I want to say, 56, 57. It's now been 11 years later since that, which is amazing. But if that timeline goes, that means that this film could be set in 1968.
Right.
I thought that movie came out in 2008.
Maybe it did, but it's still...
I was trying to do the math of like, okay, I know, and this is how I was looking at it. I was like, there's Nazis in Indiana Jones, so it's the 40s. Indiana Jones is in his 30s, maybe?
Right.
So he's 70 now, so 40 years after the 40s, is this movie going to be set in the 1980s?
You know, some people have asked, speculated it could. We don't know. The Disney, I mean, the announcement that they emailed me today was short and sweet. It was three paragraphs long. One paragraph I put into the news article at majorspoilers.com. But other than that, they're just like, and Kathleen Kennedy is coming, and Frank Marshall is coming, Harrison Ford and Steven Spielberg are coming. No mention of George Lucas, Ashley. No mention of George Lucas, the man who wrote or came up with the story for all four of the Indiana Jones movies to date.
I don't think he's allowed to write things for Hollywood anymore.
That was part of the contract when he sold everything off.
Yeah,
as a lifestyle choice.
for an extra billion, I'll not write anything for you guys anymore.
For real, though.
Is it a big deal that is it a big deal that Lucas is not involved? Anybody else, Matthew or Rodrigo?
Only in as much as it will give us, and by us, I mean all of the fans, something to really be mad about in the beginning and or mock him for later. Because if this movie is a success, the narrative will go, George Lucas was smart to stay away from it. No, that's if it's a failure. Right. If it's a success, people will be like, well, once again, George Lucas is out of touch and doesn't know and gave up on things just when they got good. So while I think it's interesting that Lucas is not yet...
That we yet involved, right.
I don't know that it's necessarily a deal breaker. I think that for me, I forget that Lucas and Spielberg did the Indiana Jones films together. Mm-hmm. My brain says Indiana Jones is Spielberg joint, but that's mostly because his girlfriend was the lead in the second
movie. Yeah, his wife.
Yeah, pretty much. Was it? Oh, is she his wife?
Yeah, this is his wife. Yeah.
Now.
Well, I think it was shortly after that movie wrapped. That's when they got married. So they've got like four or five kids. Mm-hmm. So, Rodrigo, what about the fate of Mutt Williams? Do we care about that anymore? Do you think they will quietly write that off? Or does that mean that we will see Shia LaBeouf and Marion return for yet another movie?
I think what this movie is going to be is another passing of the torch, like they tried to do last time, where they were like, okay, well, Indiana Jones is retiring, but he's this handsome new white person for you to follow.
Right.
And it didn't work out for them because the movie kind of flopped. And then Shia LaBeouf went off the deep end. Right. Well, the movie didn't flop, but it was panned. Mm-hmm. So I think they're going to try it again, which means more than likely there's a good chance that they're going to decanonize Crystal Skull. And if they don't, they're going to be very quiet about any of the events in it.
Oh, I'm sure. So, Matthew, as you try to wrap your head around numbers, Harrison Ford will be 74 years old when they start filming this movie, or at the youngest, he will be 74 when they start filming this movie. When the film releases in 2019, Harrison Ford will be 77 years old. 77 years old. That is the same age that George Hall was when the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles ended in 1993. Now, who's George Hall, everybody? Well, if you remember the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles opened up with a crotchety old man with an eye patch sitting in a museum, and kids would walk by and he'd grab him and tell them the story of whatever adventure. And then we would flash back to Sean Patrick Flannery or Corey Carey doing their young Indiana Jones bit. And then at the end, you'd come back to George Hall and he'd go, "And that's how I save Christmas." And so Harrison Ford will actually be old enough to play old Indiana Jones in 2019.
Cool. So now, that'd be Ford interesting. That would be interesting if they kept the that canonical and he lost an eye in this movie.
That's what's going to be super interesting, because I'm not sure where the young Indiana Jones Chronicles stand in continuity, whether they're in continuity or not, because there was a whole thing, Indiana Jones and the Mystery of the Blues, which was a TV movie that actually featured Harrison Ford in the 1950s with like a full beard playing a saxophone up in the Himalayas. It's pretty crazy.
Wow.
But I mean, it would be very interesting if they're like, you know what? That's how Indiana Jones was in that show. Let's give him the eye patch. Let's do something to make this interesting. I kind of hope they do that, but I don't know. Harrison Ford's already kind of having trouble getting around some sets. Putting an eye patch on him might be pretty detrimental.
or maybe
there'll be another set. Maybe there will be another set accident and he will lose his eye. I don't know.
Christopher Lee did fight choreography in his 90s.
Yes, he did.
You know, these things are entirely
He was flipping
possible.
And tumbling and fighting Yoda.
If he was 40 when he made Raiders of the Lost Ark, theoretically, this means that this movie could hand off the torch and the hat to a new actor, like, say, I don't know, somebody in their 40s, like Salma Hayek. And then, instead of Indiana Jones, you can have like a Pennsylvania Melendez. And
well, and as Rodrigo said, that's kind of what the whole Mutt Williams thing was supposed to be about at the end of the last movie, where the hat blows off and Ford picks it up and hands it to Shia LaBeouf.
They have to pick somebody we give a damn about. I mean, that the little Transformers boy is
the thing. Shia LaBeouf was hot in those days.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But Gumby has more range and probably more charm. You know, Indiana Gumby.
I had heard rumors, Ashley. Maybe I don't know if you had heard these same things too. I had heard that Chris Pratt was going to be the next Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I heard that after Jurassic World made $1 billion. And then I heard that the little nugget from Kingsman was going to be both Indiana Jones and Han Solo following Harrison Ford's foot tracks. But he was the new hotness. So I don't know. I've never seen Indiana Jones, so it doesn't matter to me.
What?
Yeah.
Wait.
You've made fun of me for this exactly 3 times to date.
Oh, no. Ashley. Raiders of the Lost Ark. You've never seen Raiders of the Lost Ark?
I don't know. They played one with Nazis when I was in history class in high school and I fell asleep. And that's all I remember.
They don't all have Nazis.
Sure they do.
Temple of Doom does not have Nazis.
Does Temple of Doom have Nazis?
No, it doesn't have Nazis. No. But no. It does have some shady characters that could be Nazis. And of course, there's the whole scene where they pluck the heads off the monkeys and everybody eats their brains and Kate Capshaw passes out.
Monkeys' brains are popular in Cantonese cuisine,
I suppose,
but seldom seen in Washington, D.C.
good reference there, Rodrigo. It's actually anything goes, but all right. So I'm interested to see where the story takes place. It's interesting. This broke today. We will see, or at the time of this recording, it broke. It'll be interesting to see how everything builds up and changes as we move to 2019. Who else will be joining the cast? Who will be writing it? We know who's directing it and starring in it, but who else will be joining? Maybe it'll be finally we uncover what happened to Short Round.
If we push it forward 8 years, that's going to put it right around 1964.
Yeah.
We could do a crossover with American Graffiti and have Indiana Jones meet young Harrison Ford in his hot rod.
Well, that would require George Lucas to be back on board.
And then we push it forward a little bit more and we can have young Indiana Jones, old Indiana Jones, meeting young Harrison Ford in Apocalypse Now. And if we do this right, eventually
maybe
we
it'll
can
be
just
a
have
big
like
time travel
an
movie.
Infinite rotation thing. Yeah.
You know what would be sad? You know what would be sad is if they did a sequel to Blade Runner, because then we'd know he wasn't a replicant, right?
I think he is involved in the sequel to Blade Runner. Harrison Ford is Blade Runner 2. I'm almost positive that he is in the movie. Yeah, it begins filming. It's filming right now. It films July this year with Harrison Ford and some other hotness guy.
Past now, I thought it took place in 2004.
I don't remember if the date was mentioned in the movie.
It was. There was a date. It was like 2014 thing.
I mean, not that anybody holds Escape from LA too close to their heart, but like that movie takes place in like the year exactly in the year 2000 because the first one took place in 1998.
Mm-hmm. all right.
That's always fun.
Any other thoughts, Ashley, on this announcement?
I got nothing. Sorry.
All right. No, that's fine. Matthew?
Yes.
Any other thoughts?
I will say, as I always do when these things come around, let's at least try and keep an open mind because, frankly, there were people who were worried that Star Wars Episode 7 was going to be an entire cluster schmoz. And then it slowly started getting good. And then they're like, yeah, we are bringing back the old people. And yeah, we're doing something new. And yeah, we're actually, you know, we're going to prove that there's more than one woman in the whole damn galaxy. And they did really well. So this could theoretically be another Star Wars Episode 7. Now, granted, it might also be Clerks, the animated series. But, you know, you throw the dice, you take your chances. Worst case scenario, we have something to yell about in 3 years.
Yep. You can find this story and a lot more over at majorspoilers.com. Don't forget, Daredevil Season 2 kicks off on the 18th. That is Friday at 12:01 a.m. And then next week, we'll cover this on Zach on Film, Batman v Superman. Movie is now projected to have somewhere in the neighborhood of $140 million opening weekend and $1 billion worldwide by the time it's all over. Ashley, is that on target?
Yeah. If you don't think that movie is going to be the biggest superhero movie that ever superheroed, you're a crazy person. The three most recognizable characters in superheroing.
I happen to be following someone's Instagram and saw her playing around with some batarangs today.
Yeah, it's cool when you know people who work for DC.
Yeah. So apparently there was some prop exhibition or something that was going on.
I got to go to Warner Brothers and oversee, well, stand out of the way for, when DCL Access interviewed, the prop designer. So they were like, do you want to hold the batarang? And I was like, I didn't think it was allowed to, but we were in like the mural room with all the fake president pictures from, the West Wing. So I look like I'm about to murder someone, which is cool.
Cool. Well, I will look forward to that DC All Access episode. Oh, you know, we haven't talked about, Jason in a while, Ashley. You were somewhat involved in this as well. What was the final update of the Jawin for Soldiers comic drive? It was a huge success, wasn't it?
I think it was like 39,000.
Holy crap.
There's a video up on youtube.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N, with the final count.
There you go. But it was much higher than, originally it was just supposed to be like 10,000 comics.
Yeah, the goal was 10,000, and everyone who donated pretty much obliterated that in the first week.
Awesome.
It was amazing. So
good on everybody who was involved with that. Yeah, definitely. All right. More stories, like I said, over at majorspoilers.com. Let us move into some reviews. So this week I am picking up Dynamite Entertainment's Lords of the Jungle number one. Notice it doesn't say Lord of the Jungle, nor does it say Lordess of the Jungle, so we don't have any musical elements in here. But
it also doesn't say Tarzan.
It does not say Tarzan because this features, well, not this issue, but this issue is a crossover between Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, and Tarzan, Lord of the Jungle. Together, they will put a stop to whatever devious things are going on in the jungle. I said Tarzan really doesn't appear in this issue because this one is all about Sheena in the modern age trying to put a stop to some guys that want to blow up a dam and flood her mystical village. She finds out that these guys are involved in some leopard gang that she's been fighting forever. And these guys do blow up the dam and flood the whole area. And in the chaos, the ground cracks open and some portal opens and she falls through along with her pet parrot. Sidekick parrot, whatever he is. And she winds up in the past of 1938, where she is in a different jungle. And she finds a building in the trees. And she meets a mysterious monkey. And there are also people there who are trying to tear up the environment. And they are attacked also by a gang of leopard men people. And then we get a flash to London with Tarzan hanging from a skyscraper. So there you go. Lords of the Jungle number one is interesting in that how do you cross over a modern character with a classic character? Of course, time travel, magical portal, whatever. And then how do you make it work? Well, I don't know how you make it work because this is only an introduction to the story. So we only get to see everything from Sheena's side of the equation. We don't really know what's going on. No explanation given. So this is an interesting hook. Art is fine. Although the coloring at times, Sheena goes from a more light skinned character to a darker skinned character, which is weird in some panels. Overall, it's not a bad start. It's better than average. I'm giving it 3 out of 5 slices of meatloaf. It's Lords of the Jungle number 1 from Dynamite Entertainment. It is out this week.
Matthew, how is Sheena the modern character? She's from like 1938 too, isn't she?
Not in the current stuff. She is all modern day Sheena.
Well, I don't like it.
Well, maybe you should give it a chance first.
Well, I haven't read it. So.
Well, then please give it a chance before you say you hate it. Matthew, you have something to share with us this week.
I do. It's a comic book based on a cartoon from the 80s.
Yeah, boy. This was announced this week from, Lion Forge Comics, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Lion Forge. And the reason that I glommed onto it was because Lion Forge is also the people who did that Andre the Giant graphic novel that we reviewed a couple months back that I really, 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 really liked.
For some reason, I want to say they're also based out of Kansas City for some reason because they are there with a ton of their creators every year at Planet Comic Con.
They may be down the street then. Yeah. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, this issue says it's printed in Canadius.
They're in St. Louis is where they're from.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Now, full disclosure, I have no idea what Saber Rider and the Star Sheriffs is or was. But again, you know, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing when you're reviewing a comic, especially issue 1 of Saber Rider and the Star Sheriffs, written by Margaret Scott, art by Sendol Arts, which may be a group of people. But I'll tell you right off the top of my head, the cover of this book is lovely. I have been reading comics for a long time, and I've become a little bit irritated of late with the fact that there's so much junk on the covers these days. And there's old man yelling at cloud. There's so much unnecessary clutter on the cover of the comic books. And this book is solid. It has your cover. It has the characters in a really cool pose, has the names of the creators. It has a number 1, boom. And all the rest of the stuff is either on the inside or the back cover, which is awesome. So you get a nice, lovely cover. You get a good-looking logo. And again, I don't know what a Star Sheriff is. I don't know what a Saber Rider is. But we come into this story, first-person narrative, by Saber Rider. His real name is Joshua Rider. His friends call him Saber, which I guess. I don't know. Anytime I hear it, I'm like, Saber Rider, qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa-fa-fa-fa. But that's neither here nor there. The story rolls out very quickly. This is a world of technology and magic and weird stuff that feels very much like a cyber old west. And when I say cyber, I don't mean like cyberpunk. I mean like 80s guys with funny armor and funny hats kind of thing. I would say that there is some Japanese and or anime influence here, but I don't know if that's intentional or if that's something where this is a cartoon that was brought over from Japan. But this issue introduces us to Joshua Rider. It introduces us to a man named Colt, who's kind of a man with no name bounty hunter guy, and a girl and a sparkly pink pony. And they all have to come together to take down one of their own, a star sheriff named Jesse Blue, who is evil and may be out to destroy the whole universe. And the thing that is really refreshing about this book, when you read a number 1, is does it set the stakes? Does it create that universe? Does it make you want to read more of this story? Again, with no concept of what a Star Saber Sheriff Saber guy is, I want to read more of this story. It's really, really well put together. The art is really consistent and phenomenal throughout the issue. Again, it feels like it's based on the cartoons like your Voltron and your things that we saw in the 80s. And when I say we, I don't mean me. Obviously, I didn't see this. But I will tell you, this is really, really strange to me to have something that is someone else's nostalgia that doesn't hit the nostalgia button for me, but still really, really is exciting and a good story and a good issue. 3 slices of meatloaf for Saber Rider and the Star Sheriffs, number 1. The last page reveal I'm like, oh, this is going to get interesting. There's some scary stuff here. But yes, you definitely want to take a look at this book if you can. It's really, really well done. And I don't mean to cast aspersions or throw shade or whatever it is that the kids say today, but when you get a book of this quality from a company that is so, so independent, it feels like it's doubly impressive. This is really solid from top to bottom in terms of production, in terms of story, in terms of the creativity involved. So kudos to Lion's Forge and everyone involved. It's a good book.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Rodrigo, hey, enlighten man. Us with your tales of Hellboys.
Right. So a few episodes ago, I reviewed Hellboy and the BPRD 1953, Beyond the Fences, number one. Now I'm reviewing Hellboy and the BPRD 1953, Beyond the Fences, number two. And I'm out of time. That was my
sorry. No. And he liked it. Or not.
Yep. No, it's good stuff. This issue, so the first issue kind of set up this mystery of what's happening in this like 1950s suburban little town. And this issue doesn't really advance it much. We get a big reveal at the end of that first issue, and this one is almost, it's 25 pages, and it's almost 25 pages of fighting. It's just everybody's fighting this giant mutant dog. You do get a little bit of a cue into the mystery. We see a character, and I don't know. There's this character that shows up, and she's like just got into town, and but she's like a pretty blonde lady, and I'm like, is this supposed to be like a pretty blonde lady that is different from like the more menacing pretty blonde lady that we already know is in Hellboy? And I'm trying to think of my like Hellboy chronology to see if she's like where she would be at this point. And it's difficult because Hellboy's chronology is complex. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm guessing it is her, but it could be a different person. Anyway, the artist. Good. This is not a Mignola joint as far as the art. This is Paolo Rivera, but it looks good. I mean, it's, you know, obviously nothing looks like Mike Mignola's art, but Rivera does a good job. Obviously, you can tell who all the characters are. The characters are well designed, kind of on model, you know, the BPRD uniforms, cops, all the people that show up. There's a few moments that are very Mignola-esque. You see somebody die of like freaky circumstances, and it starts out with like a light bulb being burst. And I swear to you, that panel with that light bulb looks like it was drawn by Mike Mignola.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So interesting stuff. I'm a big fan of Hellboy. And this is more Hellboy, so that's cool. And again, it is like mostly action. So if that's what you were looking for, then this is definitely the issue for you.
Cool.
I'm gonna give it how many slices? I'm gonna give it 4 slices of meatloaf. Again, it's basically everything's on point. It's interesting. You know, it's kind of just setting up more mysteries, and you know, fighting a giant mutant dog. So that's fun.
Now, does this have Hellboy? This has Hellboy in it, right?
Yeah.
So how did? Oh, this is in 1953. I was like, how did he get out of hell? And I thought the final issue was coming up soon.
No. This is eventually, you know, as if Hellboy continues to be as popular a character as he is, we will have a chronology of literally every day
every
of Hellboy's
year.
Life.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool.
Because this is. And I think it is like that. You know, it's like basically Mignola did all the major beats in the Hellboy series up until Hellboy died.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but there's big gaps, you know. So that's when, like, you know, the whole like Hellboy in Africa thing happened, you know. And even the story itself doesn't follow a standard, you know, this happened first, this happened second.
Right.
So there's lots of little holes where you can fit Hellboy in.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Cool. All right. Thank you, Rodrigo. And then let us shine the spotlight over on Ashley. And I don't think I've heard of this comic before. Una the Blade or Una Blade Volume 1.
Well, this is a Kickstarter comic from Cloudscape Comics that I blindly backed on the fact that Tess Fowler did a story art. And she's the, for those who don't know, she is the current ongoing artist on Rat Queens, and she's wonderful. So Una the Blade is the story of this pretty blonde barbarian lady with half her head shaved who was once kind of like if Wonder Woman was black and had a really close army that worked directly under her of Amazons. Una was like her lieutenant. She was like Wonder Woman, black Wonder Woman's to probably Nubia's right hand woman. But then, thank you, Matthew, for the long-distance assist. but then, you know, they're doing their warrior thing, and they're trying to murder everybody who has magic, because magic corrupts, and magic is dangerous. And they're murdering all these dudes, and she knows these two dudes who she's supposed to be murdering, and she's like, I'm going to save you, because we're bros. And she takes these dudes to Black Wonder Woman. And Black Wonder Woman's like, you need to kill the dudes because they have magic. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I can't kill the dudes. And so Black Wonder Woman's like, well, then you're going to be banished and I'll give you 3 days. And so she leaves with the dudes and their brothers. And one of the dudes is like, I don't want to hang out with you anymore. I'm going to leave forever. Bye. And so then Una and the dude remaining get very nude across many stories. Okay. And do adult nude things together. And then the dude dies and Una has two little baby nuggets. And she has to run from Black Wonder Woman, raise her children and not get murdered all at the same time. And it is definitely your high fantasy variety. So if you are a fan of something like Rat Queens or D&D or I guess to a lesser extent, Lord of the Rings, this is a great story with very familiar settings and aesthetics that I think you will like. It is told non-chronologically, and it's told through a series of vignettes. The writer is a lovely Canadian fellow named Steve Le Couillard. It's my guess is your French last name. He draws about half the stories, and then the other half of the stories are all drawn by guest artists, which is interesting because it really gives a different feel to each of the stories, and each narrative kind of focuses on a different big emotional beat in her life. And at first I wasn't sure that I liked it, but the more it unraveled and the more I got to learn about who Una is at her core and what she's standing up for and the reason why her and her children are running, the more into it I got. Mm-hmm. This is initially, at least when I backed it, I thought that this was just going to be one volume, and it is, but it is a complete story, but there's a lot of room for more narrative. And so I'm really hoping, because the Kickstarter was quite successful.
Yeah,
it was. So I'm really hoping that Cloudscape is like, this was quite successful. And they will either do more, or that it might get picked up by a bigger publishing house like Oni or Image and get reprinted and then get more of it. Because this definitely falls into like that feminist bent of storytelling that's kind of coming up in comics right now and in keeping with Women's Comics Month and everything. But it does it deftly in a way that doesn't feel like pandering, which is where I think sometimes stories like that fail. But it's a great time and it looks absolutely beautiful. So it definitely gets 5 out of 5 slices of meatloaf hacked violently with a giant bloody sword.
Yeah, cool. Very nice. I'm looking at the unatheblade.tumblr.com. That's the website for this. And Steve says that if you are in the Vancouver area, apparently this weekend, March 19th, they're having a book launch at Storm Crow Tavern on Commercial Drive, Saturday, March 19th from 2 to 5 p.m. There you go. So if you're a fan, find out more, you're in Vancouver, go check that out. Well, that's interesting. I'm looking at some of the art samples and stuff on the Kickstarter page. I'm looking at the stuff on the Tumblr page. It looks very fascinating.
It's awesome.
Well, thank you for bringing new books to our attention, Ashley.
Well, we started with Sunstone. It can only go up from there.
Yeah. Oh, and Saber Rider. I had seen, I'd seen that this week when I sent it out to everybody. That one also looks interesting. When that went up on the website, there were a lot of people on the Twitter feed that were just like, holy cow, this is very fascinating. I remember this show. I don't remember it either. But then again, I don't.
It doesn't have anything to do with like the Galaxy Rangers, does it? Because I remember that.
I don't remember even Moonstar, so.
It's apparently an adaptation of an anime called Bismarck. Uh-huh. And they did, like, I don't know, 20, I think it was 15 or 20 episodes. The thing about it that I think most people would remember is that there was a giant robot in it voiced by Peter Cullen.
Hmm.
Which, of course, Peter Cullen, you may know as Optimus.
As another giant robot.
Yeah, as Scooby-Doo.
And now you know, and roughly 50% of any given conflict is knowing, or so I'm told.
There you go. Speaking of conflict. Oh, boy.
Yes.
Let's get to the major spoilers poll of the week.
Poll of the week, week.
I thought this would be pretty straightforward, but nope. People are pretty passionate. You know, we've got this Batman. Matthew. We've got this Batman v Superman movie coming up.
I'm bringing it back.
Good. It's our 10th year. We should bring it back. We've got this Batman v Superman thing coming up next week. Mm-hmm. And we just had Pi Day, and so there's a big debate yesterday about pie versus cake. So how about we take this instead of who would win in a fight, Batman or Superman? Which secret HQ would you rather have? The Batcave or the Fortress of Solitude? Still keep it in the Batman. Yes, which
Krypton
which
cake or bat pie?
Bat pie or crypt cake. which one would you rather have as your secret headquarters, Ashley?
Definitely the Batcave.
How come?
No question. Because I like Batman better than Superman. I just spent more time with those characters. And mm-hmm. if I hung out in the Batcave, there's a good chance that I would get to kiss Dick Grayson. So I'm placing my bets on that side. Definitely going with the Batcave.
All right.
If he's in the Batcave, there's a good chance he's under 18.
Or that Batman's dead.
If there's a good chance, I am also under 18 because there's never
that's
like an.
True. That's so, true. There's rarely ever any adults in the Batcave.
Except Bruce Wayne. So it'll all work out in the end. Plus a giant penny.
Yep. There you go. Can't go wrong with a giant penny. Rodrigo, what about you?
Well, I really like the Fortress of Solitude's look and everything, but presumably the Batcave would be under my house. Mm-hmm. So just because I wouldn't have to travel that far,
yeah, the short commute to work, yep. one pole straight down.
Yep, just one pole, and then I'm already dressed.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Matthew, what about you?
Well, you knew I was going to be contrary.
Of course.
My assumption, since Rodrigo, you know, he says, you know, the Bat Cave's clearly under his house. I can go with that. So this means that if I'm going to live in the Fortress of Solitude, I'm obviously a Kryptonian, and that means I can fly.
Doesn't no,
to
doesn't
the,
mean you're a Kryptonian.
No.
Let him get through it. Let him get through the whole thing and you can yell at him later.
I'm a Kryptonian, right? And I can fly to the North Pole. And of course, to get into the Fortress of Solitude, you have to have superhuman strength to lift the giant key. So clearly I have superhuman strength. So what this is saying is that if I get the Fortress of Solitude, I get superpowers. So obviously I'm gonna vote the Fortress of Solitude. And also I've always felt like the Bat Cave is one of those weird kind of things that could collapse and kill me. Maybe it's just my thing. You know, when I was
only
a kid,
during
I used to think,
the earthquake.
Right. And I'm from Kansas where there's lots of fracking. So actually that's in Oklahoma, but it's right underneath us. I don't know if you've seen
it.
Yeah,
but
like,
you feel it in Kansas.
You feel it in Kansas. Right. Yeah.
There's all the square states. We just stick them all together. But yeah, I'd be worried about being underground and giant bats and snakes and plus a crazy man who tells me to eat a rat and asks me, you know, if I'm an R word, which is, by the way, extremely offensive. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the Fortress of Solitude, man.
Well, if we go by Matthew's logic, if the Batcave were my secret headquarters, that must mean I'm billionaire Bruce Wayne and I'm secretly mm-hmm. Batman and Batman always beats mm-hmm. Superman. So therefore your Kryptonian okay. powers have. No, I'm just kidding.
Go back.
So, for this, I went with the Batcave because, I don't know, the Fortress of Solitude is really, really cool, but somehow it just feels like a mausoleum, like this place where we
That's
worship
what's cool
the
about
dead,
it.
I guess, right? And then the other thing is, if he does have this zoo that we've seen both in the animated series and I think in comics, you know, where he's got all these space alien animals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for
you
real.
Definitely don't want to bring anybody in who might sneeze because we don't know what those animals' reaction would be to an unknown virus in the area, and they all suddenly die. Who wants that kind of pressure put on them? So I really can't go with the Fortress of Solitude. I've got to go with the cool high tech stuff of the Batcave.
I do like that Stephen, you hit on one of the kind of most interesting themes in like Batman Superman comics, that the more morbid plays is the Fortress of Solitude. Right. Because it is a monument to an entire dead culture. It's
a lost.
The Batcave is like, ooh, so spooky, and it's got stalactites and bats and whatever.
Plus, it's got solved. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not nearly as creepy as the Fortress of Solitude for entirely different reasons.
Yeah. So I went with the Batcave, Rodrigo Batcave, Ashley Batcave, Matthew Fortress of Solitude. How has everyone else voted so far in this week's poll of the week?
Well, unsurprisingly, much as our 3-to-1 split, the split in the votes is roughly 2-to-1. Mm. So really, it kind of ruined my whole parallel there. Right now, 77 votes in the bag, 70%, 69% of people are saying Batcave. 31% of people leaning towards the Fortress of Solitude. And I think part of it is because of the Lego Batman picture that you put in there.
It's not a Lego Batman picture.
Everybody loves Lego Batman.
Well, that's true, too. No, everybody does Batman. Love Lego Batman. I was just pleased that I was able to find two schematics of both the Batcave and the Fortress of Solitude that were from the general same angle, but like 50 years apart.
Like a Dick Sprang there, baby.
On the Batcave, yeah.
On Batcave, yeah. That's old school.
Yeah, I like that.
So kudos.
One. I like that one. Well, some of our Brenning Dragon Bread said that he went with the Fortress of Solitude and has a great explanation of why he went that way. Jeffrey says Fortress of Solitude is simple because there's no guano there. Rustcat says the Batcave seems to be too much of an ultimate dude bro man cave for my liking. Fortress of Solitude seems like the perfect place to get away from it all for a while. Mark says internet access is probably better in the Batcave. Plus, it's not the Arctic.
No. The Fortress of Solitude has Wi-Fi.
Arju, A-R-J-U, says the Batcave, I hate the cold. I hate the cold, too. If these two had, you know, everything equal, just the fact that it's clear up in the North Pole or the Arctic or wherever, although I guess now it's in the Amazon. Just the extreme cold is no thank you.
Wait, it's in the Amazon?
That's man.
Yes, unfortunately.
New
52 did have it in the Amazon rainforest. And if I'm not mistaken, there was some... No, I guess one of those world things in Man of Steel was also down in South America. But yeah, Amazon rainforest, blah.
Of the Fortress of Solitude, this latest issue of Action Comics, but I didn't say where it was.
Yeah. I think in the New 52 it is in the Amazon. Something about that is where it's at, but so wrong. Anyway. All right, everybody, you need to head over to
St. Louis.
MajorSpoilers.com. You need to cast your vote in the Major Spoilers poll of the week. And even though it seems, you know, somewhat leaning towards the Batcave or the Fortress of Solitude, there's still a whole week where you guys can go over and vote. The poll last week, that gap narrowed considerably. I think it was like 60-40, something like that, by the end of the week for the Calvin and Hobbes versus the Far Side. It was a very close poll, and the polls are always open, so you can keep voting. You can keep sharing your thoughts and read all the great thoughts at MajorSpoilers.com. Speaking of reading, I've been doing a lot of audiobook listening lately. I count that as reading.
Ooh. Sure.
And, yeah, because I've gone through some fairly okay time travel books. I'm on a new one. I forget what the name of this new one is. The Fearsome Steven's Time Travel, travel something.
Adventure.
Well, I listened to The Accidental Time Travel, and everybody said that was a really good one, but I found the ending to be fairly Stephen King-ish, and the fact that it was rushed and wrapped up and made little to no sense. And then I had talked about Replay, which I thought was very fascinating, and now I'm on to a new one. But when I'm listening to my audiobooks, I don't listen to them on big speakers because I'm at a playground where kids are playing soccer, and I need to put earbuds in, and I love using the Tweaked Audio earbuds that we get from our friends at tweakedaudio.com. Sounds great. Looks great. Some of these are able to block out some of the unwanted noise of kids screaming as they get kicked and hit while they're playing soccer. Some of them have a microphone built in so that you can record the sounds of kids getting kicked and hit at soccer. These things are engineered for durability. They have noise reduction design. They work with every audio electronic player. Best of all, when you go to tweakedaudio.com and use the checkout code MAJOR, you get 33% off your price. I was hoping to see a tweet from somebody earlier this week, I think over the weekend, was like, hey, Tweaked Audio, Major Spoilers is talking about your guys all the time. I'm going to order a pair. Can't wait for them to get here. So thank you for everyone who's using that. Major is the code, tweakedaudio.com. We thank them for their support. Mm. Let's check out an interview that Ashley did not too long ago with Sterling Gates.
And we have with us today the amazing Sterling Gates. Welcome so much and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So we're going to talk about Supergirl. And before we jump in, why don't you give us the cliff notes on your previous work before coming on to the tie-in book?
Okay. From 2008 to early 2011, I was a writer on the DCU mainline Supergirl book. I worked with an artist named Jamal Igel and a few other artists, Fernando Dagnino, Matt Camp, et cetera. Who else? Amy Reeder, Josh Middleton. I feel bad saying et cetera, because there were a bunch of really great artists on that book. Who now I can't think of now that I've put that out there.
They're all yelling into their iPhones right now.
They're all really sad that I didn't name them. But I worked with a bunch of great artists, and we were doing a lot of work dancing in and around the new Krypton saga, which was DC's big Superman story from 2008 to roughly mid-2010. And then we did a story called Bizarro Girl. And then we kind of wrapped up our run shortly before the new 52 relaunch. And that was my Supergirl experience. Since then, I launched Hawk and Dove as part of the New 52. I worked on Justice League of America Vibe. I wrote for Every Evil Argus and a smattering of other books, random books here and there. What else do you want me to talk about?
Cool. No, just whatever.
Just stop.
Awesome things you want to talk about.
I wrote and produced an indie superhero movie called The Posthuman Project that we shot in Oklahoma for very little money. It's available now on demand and iTunes and Amazon Prime and a bunch of other random spots you can find that film. And then I'm working on some cool stuff now that I can't tell you about.
Responsibly.
And then I'm writing Adventures of Supergirl, which is a tie-in book to CBS's hit TV show called Supergirl.
A bunch of people asked me on Twitter to ask you if you were going to be bringing Bizarro Girl into the Supergirl book because she made her appearance in the TV show and was very well received, very well liked character.
She was on the show. In Adventures of Supergirl series one, which is the 13 chapter book we're doing now, there are no plans for Bizarro Girl. But if we do a season two, maybe.
Cool.
If we do a series two, I guess.
What was it like jumping back into a familiar character, but from a much more restricted world than the first time you were with Supergirl in the DC Comics universe?
Restricted in what way?
Well, because you're more beholden to the continuity, I think, that the show is under. I would assume that there's less leeway. Tell me.
They've given us a lot of leeway. I mean, I pitched them this 13-part story, and I said, look, I want it to take place early in season one, so we're not stepping on anything you guys are going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they really gave us leeway and told us to go nuts. But you know, obviously, I can't kill anybody. I can't break anybody's leg.
So you can't recast it.
but we can put people through some serious stuff, and we do.
I think you do with Alex in the first two issues.
Oh, we do a lot with Alex, and we put her through the ringer. This story is very much about Supergirl and her sister, and dealing with some ramifications of Alex's previous actions, and ramifications of Supergirl's current life and her job with the DEO, and dealing with Allura and decisions Allura made that are affecting Supergirl and Alex now.
Interesting.
And so it's a big kind of romp, and we do a bunch of cool villains that they're not using on the show. Specifically, because they're not using them on the show, we wanted to use them in the book because Supergirl has a very small but cool rogues gallery, and so I wanted to use some of the characters that they weren't going to use that I've always wanted to do. Like, I've always wanted to do a Supergirl versus Psy story.
Is that something we can look forward to?
Oh, yeah. That's chapters 6 and 7. I get them all mixed up.
Because there's different numberings on both sides, right?
So chapters, I think it's chapters 6 and 7. It might be chapters 7 and 8. I'm pretty sure it's 6 and 7. Anyway, Supergirl goes up against Psy, who's one of my favorite. She's an old Paul Kupperberg, Carmen Infantino.
That's Supergirl an awesome villain. Name.
Paul Kupperberg?
Yeah.
He's one of the classics, man. Like he's one of the great DCU creators of the Bronze Age and early 80s. And he kind of fell out, and he's still around. He's on Twitter. And they're reprinting his run on Supergirl soon. I think over the summer, you'll have trades coming out of Daring New Adventures.
Nice.
But that stuff is great. Like Master Jailer. He wrote the first Master Jailer Supergirl fight, and they're doing that on the show.
Yeah.
But he and Carmen Infantino, they created a bunch of different rogues. Decay and Matrix Prime and Psy and the gang. Miss Mesmer, one of my favorite supervillain names.
So no restrictions trying to pull in some outside rogues.
No, I sat down with them. We had a few meetings. They said, let us know what you need from us. Go crazy. And so I pitched them my sort of mini rogues gallery I wanted to use and then a new villain. And they approved.
A new villain?
Yeah. They approved all of it. And so we've just been jamming on that stuff. I was worried about Vryl Dox. We're doing a Vryl Dox story about doxing. not even a joke.
That's amazing.
And I was worried what they would say about Vryl Dox. And they were totally cool with it. And they like our take on him. And he looks cool. And that's that story is the Strange Case of the Smiling Computer.
I love that.
it's a Silver Age title, but it's a very modern story. It deals with swatting and doxing in the workplace.
That's dark. That's dark for Supergirl.
It's dark, but we approach it in a very lightish way because we're not allowed to kill anybody.
Yeah.
but we definitely approach like what information can you find on the internet and how that can affect you drastically. And Wynn, as someone who is Wynn Schott, who if you watch the show is someone he's very connected to the internet and he's very connected to computer world and hackery and stuff and
hackery
he discovers some things about the internet, the darker side of the internet, and the internet strikes back, so to speak. So Vryl Dox pops up and Psy, and you've already seen Rampage in the first three parts. We deal with Rampage, and Rampage is a cool John Byrne character, from a former Superman villain, then became a Supergirl villain.
She pops up in the Matrix Supergirl stuff with Peter David.
Peter David,
I just read a bunch of that.
it was just about pulling villains. I had a list. I still have a list of Supergirl villains I wanted to sort of brush off and throw at Supergirl back when I was on the book with Jamal. Our run stopped at a certain point, and so I have all this stuff of plans I wanted to do or takes I wanted to do on characters, and Rampage was always on my wanted list because she's essentially like she's a Hulk-like character. And that challenges Supergirl physically in a way that a lot of other Supergirl rogues don't. There aren't a lot of, Bizarro Girl's like the correct reflection, right? But there aren't a lot of physically comparable villains for Supergirl to go up against in her classic rogues gallery. And Rampage was one. And so I really wanted to do a Rampage story. And I thought to kick off in the biggest sort of way possible, kick off the series, it was how can we do sort of widescreen, super giant, explosive action. Let's put Rampage in first and talk a lot about anger and Kryptonian, the Kryptonian reaction to physical danger, and Rampage allowed us to do that. And then tying Rampage back into Alex and Alex's early days in the DEO we did that intentionally to, well, we're still doing that. Like, it's still coming out. We're doing that intentionally to help tie Supergirl and Alex together in this, in the Department of Extra-Normal Operations, to tie them together further, because their relationship is, for me, the most important and interesting relationship on that entire show.
You had a line that I thought was really brilliant and I'd never considered before in the first issue, where she talks about English being a second language for her. Because I just assume that, like, you know, because Superman shows up and he's fine.
We're
and
doing a lot of stuff with that, stuff like that. I think that's a really interesting idea, too, is Supergirl. I mean, obviously on the show, we have them speaking English when we do these Krypton flashbacks, and
for the subtitles aren't that sexy, so
right. So, but in the books, you know, we can have them speaking Kryptonian for four pages, and it seems foreign to the reader. But if you know, like the Kryptonian symbols, you mm-hmm. know, pictograph symbols, like you understand what they're saying. And if you don't, there's a ton of guides on the internet where you can look up. and translate line for line, and I thought it would be really interesting to have a whole have a chapter where a chunk of it is in Kryptonian, and so we do that later on in the book. But I think it's really interesting to think about, like, cultural differences. Like, Supergirl is an immigrant, and she was dropped, and yes, she has an incredibly fast mind. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of the charms of the character. She picks things up really quickly, but dropping her in a foreign environment. And I wrote a line in chapter two, like, you know, like Earth's physics and Krypton's ideas of physics don't exactly line up. But I mean, universal constants are, in theory, universal. But you're also dealing with people that can fly and had spaceships, and like Krypton was a very different society and a further advanced society, and their ideas of universal physics aren't necessarily the same. And by the way, universal physics that Kryptonians learn as little kids aren't exactly the same as like college level, university level physics that humans might learn on Earth. And so I wanted to kind of point that out and dance between that and deal with the fact that Supergirl is an immigrant who has a very different education than a young woman who has been through Earth's fine university system. and some things, you know, can seem backwards to her because, mm-hmm. you know, they have holographic technology. Like, you know, they
use it for more than just bringing back a rapper for Coachella.
Right. Well, and like Sunstone technology, like they embed information in permanent things that can't be broken. And like she snaps a laptop in half and they're like, oh, we lost the information. She's like, what do you mean we lost the information? Like, why isn't it still there?
Like, that's how I feel all the time.
And so I wanted to sort of address some of that stuff that they might not get to on the show and her internal monologue, which I love writing. It's my favorite part of writing Supergirl is what is she thinking?
Is that influenced at all by the art and the pages that you get back, or more just bedded in what you know about the character? Because you have a really amazing artist working on this.
Back and forth. I mean, I'll cut down on some stuff. Just like Bengal was sending in art and it was so beautiful. And Bengal's an amazing artist. Mm-hmm. I think he's a master. It was so beautiful. I wanted to cut down on some of those captions so you could see more of his art. and so I had to rewrite a lot of chapter two, just all that internal narration, just cut it down in order to open up the artwork a little more. But I don't know. I mean, it all starts with script and it all starts with where the character is emotionally and dealing with like superhero physics was a big part of chapter two. I really wanted to kind of address, because it's one thing like to see Superman. Like Superman Returns, one of my favorite Superman mm-hmm. bits in that is he tries to catch the plane and the wings fly off, break off as the plane's crashing. And I thought, God, it's got to be so tough to worry about, like, what are the physics of what I'm doing right now? And how will me, a superpowered flying human being, alter the physics of an object as I try to catch it?
Mm-hmm. That's something they don't address enough on The Flash either, I think. Like, we got the one scene with Felicity's shirt burning off. But it's like, but she would really be dead.
Sure. I mean, there's, you're
and
given,
yes, I know this before.
There's a suspension, of disbelief that you sort of undertake. But I always appreciate little touches where someone has thought through the physics of superheroics. Like there's a beat in Days of Future Past, the movie, mm-hmm. where Quicksilver steadies Magneto's head for the whiplash. And I thought that was such a smart little detail in a movie where you've got, you know, Sentinels blowing up people and like Magneto throwing metal and like all this stuff. There's at least one little touch of like, well, if you ran with someone at super speed, like their neck would snap back quickly.
Yeah.
And so like, let's at least address that. And so so that was one of the things that I wanted to do in Adventures of Supergirl chapter two was talk a little bit about flying physics and how tough it is to plan for okay, if an object impacts against me and it's crashing and it's going at X number of miles an hour and the falling rate is constant, like what does that do inside? Now, again, you've got to kind of bend disbelief because like if a helicopter crashed as violently as it did in that book, I'm pretty sure more than one guy's arm would be broken.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, at the end of the day, it's a superhero book and you're trying to explore.
And you're not allowed to kill anyone.
And I'm not allowed to kill anyone. I can beat up DEO agents all day long, but I just wanted to kind of show that like, yeah, that's something we consider when you write these sequences, like you've got to kind of think about the physics of it all. And like Superman can catch a building, but like if there's that much weight on a building and Superman's catching it, wouldn't the building shatter around him, you know? And how much disbelief are we willing to suspend when we read these books? And so it's something I always kind of think about, and I thought it would be a nice take, nice hook on Supergirl. Is her thinking about the difference between Earth physics versus the physics she grew up with and those being different because she comes from a vastly different culture with a very different language. And I'm glad you like that English is a second language.
I loved it so much.
We do a lot more of that later on, especially because Alex is a character who, you know, she only speaks Earthbound languages. And so
when
Kryptonian comes up, Alex is like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, you're just saying things and I don't understand.
Your linguistic structure is like way over here.
So I don't know. I just thought it'd be fun. And we're, you know, I've been, there's a great website that gets really deep into the Kryptonian language. And I've been reading a lot about Kryptonian.
You've been doing the grammar exercises?
I've been thinking about it. Like, It's funny because like in the Silver Age, E. Nelson Bridwell, and this is super deep cuts, but like E. Nelson Bridwell in a letters column someone said like, how many letters are there in the Kryptonian alphabet? And he goes, well, there's 116 or 118 or whatever. And so then the next month, the letters were like, great, what are they? and so he, before he passed away, he designed what he deemed the Kryptonian alphabet, but it's a lot of it is based on a spoken syllabic language. And so symbols mean different
syllables. So it's more like Chinese than English.
Rather than the direct. And the Kryptonian we use now post 1986 is all just letter for letter direct translation, right? So Silver Age Kryptonian is a very different thing and it doesn't always translate. And you've got a lot of letterers at the time who were just sort of drawing symbols in and someone saying, wow, they're speaking Kryptonese. And that was
Kryptonese. I love that.
I know they said it in the first, I think the second episode of first or second episode of Supergirl. And I was like, Kryptonese, we're still calling it that.
Not Kryptonian.
We call it anything else, but we're sticking with what they decided in the 40s. Cool. Love it.
I think it's interesting sometimes what things we hold on to from like the golden and silver age inceptions of these characters and what gets to drop away more along the way.
Well, what we hold
Kryptonese
on to
being one of them.
The Donnerverse. I mean, the Donnerverse still influences how we think of Krypton and Kryptonian structures. That, you know, we got sunstones from them. We got the Forces of Solitude being mostly crystal from the Donnerverse.
Icy.
I mean, like that was... Yes, it was in the Arctic and has been for years, but like the way the crystals work and all that stuff, all that comes from those movies. Because that was a new take on them. Young not Chris Reeve throwing that sunstone thing out into the water and then the fortress erupting upwards and it being all pointy and sparkly, like that was a thing that was from that movie, unique to that movie, and that became the Fortress of Solitude from that point on.
I think Superman's origin in Kansas comes from the radio serials of the time. I know it wasn't a comics thing originally, and it's something that was adapted later and has become such a huge cornerstone of who that character is.
Sure. And it's interesting to watch like people react differently, or I mean maybe I wasn't around the 40s, but like people react differently from stuff coming from the shows and being infused in the comics. And there's sometimes a pushback of, oh, they're just doing it because the TV show or the movies do that. And it's like, well, yeah, it's like more people, I was saying this to someone the other day, like more people watch Supergirl, the TV show, than have read Supergirl historically, possibly ever on a regular basis. You know, like if it has 13 million viewers or more, depending on how the ratings stack up, like that's more people than have read a Supergirl comic in the last probably 30 years, you know, like I'm sure someone out there will do the math and prove me wrong, but like, but like comics don't have the same reach that these TV shows and movies are. So why wouldn't you want to pull successful elements out of those media versions and put them in the comics to make them a little more familiar? You know, we got Jimmy Olsen from the radio show. We got Kryptonite from the radio show. Like, and those are now 60 years later, cornerstones of the Superman super universe.
I can't wait until a generation from now, like everyone who's a little kid watching the show who never goes on to read comics comes back and reads a comic and says, wait, but Jimmy Olsen's black. Sure. The same way that after the Justice League cartoon premiered and then the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern movie came out, everyone said, wait, but Green Lantern's black.
Sure. I mean, it's Alex Danvers. I really think of all the things the show has done, Alex Danvers should be introduced in the comics.
I agree.
In the main comics. I think it adds such an interesting dynamic to that character. It's a dynamic we played a lot in our run with Lana Lang, who was a familiar Superverse character that we essentially recruited from the Superman book into Supergirl to make her a big sister to Linda Lang, which is our take on Kara's secret identity, and now she's Kara Danvers. But we wanted Lana to be that big sister role. Originally, in the first draft of that script, it was going to be Lois. And I was going to make Lois more of Supergirl's big sister, because they, you know, historically, their books have always tied together. Like in the 80s, like Lois Lane was the backup story in Supergirl every month. Like, so I wanted to tie them together. And Lois, because we were doing so much with Sam Lane and Lucy Lane, editorial, rightly so, felt like, to have Linda Lane be a new character would send up red flags, and it would feel like we're doing too much with the Lane family. So so we rewrote Supergirl 34 to make it about Lana and about Supergirl and Lana's relationship forming, and then Lana offering the Lang name to Supergirl. So it's, you know, it was a fun run, and I'm glad to see that there is a big sister character for Supergirl in the show, and in Alex Danvers, and writing the two of them has been really fun. I was going to say super fun, but that's silly. It's been really gratifying to write the two of them back and forth, just because I think that's such an interesting, unique relationship the show has gifted to Supergirl. So
for more Supergirl goodness, where can people find you all over the internet?
I am all over the internet, I guess. I have a website, sterlinggates.com, and I have a Twitter feed, twitter.com/sterlinggates, all one word. But I'm around. I think there's a Facebook fan page that I don't update nearly often enough, the Sterling Gates fan page. But mostly Twitter, and Twitter is the main way to get a hold of me. Website.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Ashley, that was a great interview. Thank you so much for doing that.
Anytime.
And I think that wraps it up for this issue. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Ashley, where can people find more of you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. You can find me on Instagram at the same name, because I'm there now. You can find all of our new Geek History Lesson podcast episode at majorspoilers.com. This week we're talking about The Punisher, so it's a good week to die hard or something like that. And you can find my girl on Supergirl Reviews also at majorspoilers.com. Just go to Major Spoilers and you'll find my name all over.
There you go. Matthew, where can people find you?
Well, if you click on Major Spoilers and you hit a podcast, you got a 5 in 7 chance of hearing me. Also, if you dial the right number between 8 and 3 weekdays and, you know, you hear a male voice, you got a 1 in 3 shot of it being me. I'm available on the Twitter at Mighty King Cobra. I also do birthday parties and bar mitzvahs. And if you wanted to follow me on Twitter, you certainly can. But you can also follow me on the Tumblr. I don't know what I'm doing. Yay!
And Rodrigo.
You can find me at Fearsome Critter on Twitter or Magic Turtle on Tumblr. Also, I wrote a book. So if you go to Amazon and you type in Tallest Rabbit, you will see a book called The Tale of Tallest Rabbit. You should buy it and read it. And it's kid friendly. So if you have any children, you should read it to them too.
There you go. All right. Thank you, everyone. Next week, we'll be back with Barry Allen. What does that mean? You'll have to listen and find out. I bet it has to do with comic books, and we know that you love comics, and we do too. We will talk with you soon.
Stop talking about comic books, or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm gonna rearrange your things if you continue to debate whether Logan's claws could pierce Steve Rogers' shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Kraven. Spider-Man's a clone. Stop spending all our cash on back issues of The Flash, or I swear to God you're gonna spend your twilight years alone.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.